Welcome to the Dream Huge Podcast, where we'll talk with real estate investors, entrepreneurs, business leaders, athletes, and more to inspire you with their success stories so you can work hard, never give up, and dream huge. And now, let's start the show.
Oh, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Dream Huge Podcast. We love to share success stories from huge dreamers, folks in the real estate business, entrepreneurs, movers, shakers, influencers, and more. And hopefully these stories and interviews will help to motivate you to dream huge. And today we have our host, special host, Justin Bigelow. Biggie, the three-time champ. What is up, Biggie?
Just enjoying life. Another happy Monday. Getting out there, feeling outstanding. How are you, Pete?
Good, man. I am outstanding as always. Your co-host of the Dream Huge Podcast, Pete Peterson, doing outstanding. So let me welcome our special guest, Mr. Mark B. Murphy. How you doing, Mark?
I'm actually doing great. I don't know if I have as much. I don't know if I was doing as great as you guys, but I'm doing great. You guys.
We hear that a lot. We have a.
I need to get as pumped up as you guys are.
We hear that a lot. We have high energy on the Dream Huge Podcast. Well, this helps a little bit. It's one of our secrets.
I got some drugs I'm taking too. A little bit of 2% milk in it. That's good.
Very good. So let me get you a little introduction for my man Mark B. Murphy. He is CEO of Northeast Private Client Group. Is an accomplished author, speaker, and motivator who's revolutionizing the financial planning and wealth management industry. He helps entrepreneurs everywhere, folks, achieve multi-generational wealth through personalized strategies, leveraging his strategic planning and financial engineering expertise. And Forbes actually has him ranked as the number one financial security professional in the state of New Jersey and number 15 nationwide, folks.
Additionally, 2022. Last year they moved me from 15 to number 3.
So, moving up the rankings, yes. And additionally, last but not least, his book, The Ultimate Investment, The Ultimate Investment, is a number one bestseller and available on Amazon right now. So, Mr. Mark B. Murphy, with all that being said, break that down for us a little bit for us and tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is that you do.
I'm a key business strategist, critical thinker, financial advisor to entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial thinking people. And, I decided about 35 years ago that I wanted to be a hero to that group. And I've just built a business about collaborating with other people who wanted to be a hero to the same group, where people immediately saw that entrepreneurial synergy and they realized that's the only place they could get that experience. And, I've dedicated myself to, the thing what bothered me so much is when I hear people say things like, I wish I just had a level playing field. So for years, I used to think, well, who would want a level playing field? I want to run straight downhill. And then I realized, well, that's not good enough either. What I want to do is I want to help people I care about play in a competition-free zone where the only place that customer, patient, or client can get that experience is by working with them. And that's how we built the company, and that's how we've how we've grown our business so well.
When struggling entrepreneurs reach out to you, what are some of the common problems that you see?
I think the number one problem people have is confidence. I think that the number one job of an entrepreneur or an entrepreneurial thinking person is they've got to protect their own confidence. I think ultimately, I'm a big sports fan, big basketball fan. And I find, when that first shot goes down for a player, it seems like they're confident, can hit shots all game. But if that first shot, rims out, it changes how their mentality. They've lost a little confidence in their shot. And I think it's the same thing in life. I think so many folks out there, they just go back and they allow other people from the outside to affect how they feel about themselves. And I think that, you know, that I think that the job that what I try to do is, yeah, I see people where they are, because you have to see people for where they are. You can't, you know, have it with rose-colored glasses or Pollyannish. But I also want to see people at their highest potential.
Right.
And if you can see people at their highest potential, it gives them the confidence that you have belief in them. Because remember, I always say everything is BS, belief systems. It's all BS.
All starts right here. The most powerful muscle in the body, if you can call it a muscle. But that's where it all starts.
Yeah.
So how do you help folks get over that confidence hump?
I think it starts with, the first thing it's got to start with, depending on who you are and where you are in the cycle, is it's got to start with a few things. I think it's got to start with no blaming, no complaining, no excuses. When you see people that are not performing, they got all the reasons why, you know, life was against them, and you know, here's this excuse, or here's this problem, or someone else's fault. I think the first thing you have to do is you have to take accountability and responsibility for it. And then you got to get really focused, you got to get really disciplined, and you got to fall in love with the mundane.
Yeah, that's it. Ultimate accountability, extreme accountability, and the mundane, the daily tasks, right? Your future success, you can predict your future success by looking at your daily routine. And this is a big one. I'm going to tie this back into real estate and real estate agents specifically. They may, when they start out, they're like, Pete, I'm not getting any business. I'm not getting anywhere. I feel like I'm doing these things every day that you're telling me to do, and I'm not closing any deals. Well, how long have you been doing that? Okay, well, a month. I've been doing it for a month straight. Okay, well, that's a start. But this is something you're building over time. Those daily tasks compound. And what's the most powerful force in the universe? Compound interest, right? So you build those daily tasks, those mundane tasks, like Mark said, and over time they will reward you.
I don't disagree with that. You know, there's been a lot of different books written on the subject, but you know, they always talk about there's three types of people. There's givers, there's takers, there's matchers. And takers in the beginning usually get a little bit of a head start because they're just taking, they're not giving. And givers are the lowest performers in the beginning. And for those of you who are watching or listening, a matcher is, I'm going to be nice to Justin because he can help me, but screw Pete because he can't do anything for me, so he's dead to me. But Justin, I'm going to focus on because I think he can help me. And I think what people realize is that if you take not, you said a month, I say not even months, sometimes not even years, but if you pour into people for decades, I promise you, you will have an army of people that want to come back and help you. And the idea is you don't do it with a quid pro quo that I'm doing something because I expect something back or I attach the outcome. You just go out there and give and pour into people and make a difference in the lives of all the people you touch. And the world will provide abundance for you.
We say it all the time. Stop selling and start helping.
Right.
Yes, sir.
It's you know, I think the other thing too is that I am not afraid to be different. I'm afraid to be the same. And so many folks, like, you know, they follow a cookbook and they're doing what everybody else is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they think, well, why am I not getting any different results than what everybody else is doing by doing that? Like, I always talk, like, when you mentioned at the top of the show, like, with young people when they ask, or newer people in the business, is I think it's great to be asked to have a seat at someone else's table, but I think you want to build your own damn table.
Right.
You want to build your own table and play by your rules. I'm not talking about compliance rules or ethical rules or other things. Of course, we're going to be at the highest place of integrity and ethics. But I mean, just playing in terms of how you think differently, that you could provide more value than anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, 100%.
Yep. Build your own table.
Build your own table, do your own thing. I was just telling Pete about that before we got on here. You know, I live by my life, my rules. I don't give in to anybody else unless it fits for me. It's because I'm willing to be different. And I don't want to follow the herd.
You know what I think is really interesting is that oftentimes it's not that you can't develop other strategies to continue to be a thought leader in your industry. And I think in terms of the core skills and business you have, that you want to be a thought leader and always be elevating and initiating and getting to the next level. But oftentimes in most businesses, the thing that differentiates you from somebody else has nothing to do with your core mission. It's being a great listener and then finding a way to deliver that value and elegance and excellence. Like, you know, as an example, there's a story that I had heard years ago about a guy who was a self-proclaimed, called himself a redneck from the South. He had never been to New York City before. This was about 20 years ago. And that was when you had those drives, like those little drives you travel with, and then you go to like a Kinko's and then you print stuff. And he had to be at this meeting with like 1,000 people. He had to print like, you know, 100 pages for each of 1,000 participants in the meeting. So he comes up with a little hard drive and he gets involved and he is like in a panic because he's going to be late for the meeting. He told me he'd never seen a building more than 5 stories, and he's in the skyscrapers of Manhattan, and he's just like out of his sorts. He's going to get fired and lose his job. And he goes into a FedEx, and he told the guy his story, and he said, I'd never been anybody that was Puerto Rican before. And it was my first time I met a kid. He was this 19-year-old Puerto Rican kid working at FedEx. And he told him his story. And he said, just wait here a minute. And he goes into the back. And he comes out and gets somebody to cover the front desk. And he literally took him by the arm and took him to a Kinko's. He printed all the stuff the guy got to his job. He didn't get fired. He was a hero. He got his job done. And this kid helped him. And when he came back, he was thinking, in what planet did this 19-year-old kid in New York who worked for FedEx, in any word his job description was, when this guy who's out of his mind comes up here and needs this favor, we don't even make copies. And he changed that guy's life or made a difference in that life. Or, you know, or I can think, you know, in my own world, you know, one of the things that we're so proud of, you know, with my oldest son who now works with us is we had a family who was on the death list in Afghanistan a couple of years ago, and the Taliban was hunting him down. And we were able to use our contacts to get in touch with the Taliban commander and get that family who was on the death list through all the checkpoints and eventually out of the country. I could probably spend 4 hours telling the story, and it should be a movie. But the idea, in what job as a financial advisor did it talk about getting people in a war situation out of a country on the death list, get them out of the country? It's something, you know, we're so proud of. I've got 100 stories just like that, which had nothing to do with the return on their money or the tax strategy you had, or you know, how you helped them grow their business. It had nothing to do with anything. It had to do with just caring about people. That when I started this company 38 years ago, this was my vehicle to make other people's lives better. And it just so happened that I thought all the abundance would happen, but that's not why we did it. We did it because I was always at my best when I was serving others. And I'm attracted to people like you two who are my brothers from another mother who do the same thing.
Amen. That's exactly right. You know, we had Tracy Jones on. She's a real estate broker. And she said, you know, if I'm not improving someone's quality of life, then I'm not interested in that transaction. So that's what she always reverts back to. I need to help improve someone's quality of life. And that's what those stories tell. And it wasn't even in their job description. It was not in your job description either. But you're looking to obviously do that throughout your career, but outside the lines of your career, if you can continue to do that, help others and help improve people's quality of life. And in your case, actually keep someone alive. It's amazing. Yeah, that's a whole nother podcast in itself and a movie. That is an amazing story. Mark, what type of business folks and entrepreneurs typically come to you? What type of sectors do you work with?
We work with lots of different sectors. I mean, everything from healthcare to people in hedge funds and private equity to construction. When I say healthcare, we've got lots of dentists and doctors and veterinarians and chiropractors. I mean, I think it's less that. It's more of a mindset, but it's more people that I find. People are generally big thinkers. They're generally people that are loyal. They're generally people that want to be in transformational relationships rather than transactional relationships. They generally appreciate our expertise. They generally like to reciprocate. I mean, I think that ultimately, Pete, you generally build a business around people. You know, I used to think, you know, when I tried to clone our, figure out who our top 20 or 40 or 50 clients were about 20 years ago, I tried to figure out these common traits, and those were some of them. And I didn't put two and two together right away, but I realized after a while, a few years later, thinking back on it, who our best clients are who we are. Because yes. we're big thinking, we're loyal, and we're hardworking, and we want to be transformational relationships. And I think ultimately, that's the kind of folks that you want to, that you don't want to be there for everybody. You don't want people. I don't want transactional people in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want people that don't want to reciprocate. I don't like people that don't have integrity or loyalty or other things. There's a lot of people who do business with people that don't have ethics or integrity.
That's the law of attraction. What you emit, you will receive. And I believe, I'm a huge believer in energy and light, kind energy. And the three of us are here together for a reason, because we were attracted to each other because we have that similar energy. That's the law of attraction. What you emit, you will receive. Love it. All right, so let's talk about your book specifically. What is The Ultimate Investment, by the way? And what sets your book apart from other authors and other books similar to that in the realm of entrepreneurship and leadership?
I think the best thing it starts with is, or I think the differentiating factor is, that the best investments entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial thinking people make is when they invest in themselves. So a lot of people think that being an entrepreneur means you own a business. And quite frankly, many of them do. But there's many people who own a business. And I'd say the majority of people who own a business are not entrepreneurs. They bought themselves a job.
Yeah.
They're getting paid for what they do rather than what they know. But many of them are entrepreneurs that we work with. But it's more of a mindset. Even if you work for somebody else and you're the product, you know, should we invest in building your network or the right education or training to be able to help you get to the next level, or leadership, or things that you need to do to chart your path? You know, it doesn't happen. I think things happen with intentionality, not by random, just randomly, meaning I don't want to play the lottery and hope I win the lottery. I mean, it'd be great to play the Powerball tonight and win. It would be wonderful. But the idea is that's not a life. The life is with intentionality and solid reasoning and trying to help people make proper investments in themselves so that that's the way they can create multi-generational wealth. So few people do it. And so many people we've trademarked our pyramid of multi-generational wealth to give people step-by-step, way to be able to grow the wealth. Now, that's not part of this book. That's the book I'm working on right now. This book, though, talks about the investment. So if you have only $1 to invest, and only $1, the first place I would always look would be to invest in myself. And so the idea is, I have an unlimited appetite for investment as long as I can get at least a 4 or 5 to 1 return on my money or more. And I have really no appetite for investment or for expenses, right?
Great advice. Always invest in yourself. First and foremost, invest in yourself.
Like they say on the airplane, put the oxygen mask on yourself first, and then help others. You invest in yourself, and then you can go save everybody else.
One of the things, I know you guys do work with a lot of realtors or, real estate folks in that business. And, the thing expression that I love is, like, people always say, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And I believe there is some truth to that. And, there are some people in various industries because they've got an incredible network that they've done well. But I think the real thing, particularly for people that have not had the time, either weren't born into a network or haven't had the years to build it, I think the right expression should not be, it's who you know. I think the right expression is, who knows what you know? How do you find people who know what you know? And so the idea that part of it is being able to get out there and, you can basically, I don't have a photographic memory, but a near photographic memory. And I played competitive chess in high school, and I'm a master's bridge player. So I always thought, you know, 8 moves ahead or 13 tricks ahead. And so having knowledge was very important 20 years ago or 25 or 30 years ago when I started. But now you can virtually go on YouTube and Google anything on knowledge. You can figure out anything about anything. You know, if somebody comes and then you go to social media and they go, here are my five tips to become a, you know, how to create multi-generational wealth. And then somebody else says, no, I have six tips on how to create multi-generational wealth. And somebody else says, I have 7 tips to create multi-generational. And they go, no, you only need 5. You don't need 7. You only need 5. And it's like, it's the same BS that's there. And so I think what you want to do is you want to focus on wisdom. You want to focus on vision. You want to focus on things that can differentiate you from everybody else, which it's not knowledge because you can get that on Google. And so how do you get out there so that you, if everybody, you know, if you looked at your phone in the last week, you probably had 50 people that emailed you, called you, or texted you to sell you something. So if everybody's taking that channel, do you find another channel that's different from those folks to differentiate yourself from other people?
I like that.
How do we get, you know, are we going to get to a point where schools, educators are switching over to wisdom and vision curriculum and away from knowledge-based courses? Because like you said, knowledge is so readily available now. It's right. It's ridiculous.
You know, when I went to the, one of my happy places for a New Yorker or guy lives in Palm Beach in New York and New Jersey, is my happy place is Bloomington, Indiana, because I went to Indiana University and, you know, I'm a basketball and football season ticket holder. I'm one of the big boards now. I've got 3 of my 5 kids that are there now. And so I love that place. And when I went to the Kelly Business School a million years ago, it was a knowledge kind of based system, and it was a top 20 business school. And it's gotten into the top 10 and rising over the last couple of years because, as I see it through my kids' eyes, it's become incredibly practical and having people ready to assume jobs in finance and in business right away, and they're properly prepared, which you don't get by memorizing stuff about finance or accounting or marketing in a book. And I think that ultimately, that where the education system is broken is that ultimately, if you said 20 years ago, I'm not paying this kind of money to a university to indoctrinate my kids and give them a bunch of hooey, where they have no practical skills to come out of school. And so I think that any university that's going to be worth its salt better have a value proposition to say, I don't care if you charge $30,000 a year, $50,000 a year, $100,000 a year, $1 million a year. If I'm paying $80,000 a year and there's no inflation, that means on a 4-year degree, I paid $320,000 for that education. What's my investment return? And so many of those things, they just come out with a lot of anxiety and a lot of agita and a lot of non-marketable skills that cannot allow them to not only cope in life, but not to be able to make a living. And I think that ultimately that where education needs to go in this country is to do exactly what you're saying, to acknowledge that the world has shifted because of the internet. The world has shifted because we're in a global economy. The world has shifted for anyone of I could spend hours talking about half a dozen other reasons. So I want to make sure our kids come out there with the right things. It's my job as their parent to make sure it's faith, family, and service in our job. You know, I want my kids to be happy. I have 5 kids. I want them to be happy. But that's their job to be happy. I want my kids to be hardworking, thoughtful, and respectful. Of course I want them to be happy. But I have too many parents who just want their kids to be happy. Or they're happy to pay money to something that, quite frankly, if you looked at it in a serious way, there's too many institutions, and not all of them, but there's too many institutions that people are coming out with these incredible amounts of debt, these students, without the ability to pay them back, not because there's not jobs available, but because the institution didn't educate
them. Incredible. But you had mentioned Indiana. That you are happy with their shift going towards that new style of education.
It's been amazing. Like I've actually kind of horned in with my kids and like they, you know, what's this project? They go, wow, I wish they had that when I was there. This is really high level, high thinking stuff. This is about, this is what I said earlier. This is helping people with vision. This is helping people with wisdom. It's not helping people with knowledge or helping them get with a degree that is just going to have them come out to be angry and that they're, you know, that the world is against them. Because you remember, what I tell my kids is you can either be empowered or you can be a victim. You can't be both. You have to choose.
Absolutely.
You have to be, you have to be abundant or you have to be in scarcity. You have to choose.
Yep. It's one or the other.
At the end of the day, you have excuses or results. You cannot have both.
What did the great professor and great philosopher Yoda say? Do or do not do. There is no try, right?
That's right.
Yeah, it's like the banner at the gym. Nobody cares. Work harder.
That's right. All this great stuff, great nuggets. Mark B. Murphy, the famous Mark B. Murphy, the famous Indiana Hoosier alum. I saw you hanging out with another famous Hoosier alum on your Instagram there, your old buddy Mark Cuban.
Well, I say what Mark and I have in common is our great love. We have many things in common, but what we have is the great love for that institution because, you know, I'll let Mark speak for himself. He does that pretty well. But I would speak for me and say that, you know, when you grow up dumb and broke in Suffern, New York, and you get a place like that that gave you a chance, that's why I've always been very appreciative of the school. And I always consider myself, even though I've always lived in New York, on the East Coast, I always consider myself a New Yorker with Midwestern sensibilities. That there's no right way to do the wrong thing. There's no right way to not be kind to people. And, you know, I just know that, just as easily as someone can ruin your day, somebody can make your day too with a little bit of kindness. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. And so, you know, I just think that, you know, and he's a pretty special guy, meaning, you know, there's a lot of people that, forgot where they came from. There's a lot of people that, become too big for their britches. You know, they don't remember. And I don't think Mark's one of those guys. I think he's somebody that has all the right values and is trying to do the right thing. Whether you agree with him 100% of the time or not, you know, is not the point. The point is that that the world needs more people who give back like he does.
Yeah, and that's incredible. And you know, and you shouted out Indiana again, and they gave Mark a chance. Mark Cuban, they gave you, Mark B. Murphy, a chance, and you were thankful for that, and they gave you the opportunity, but you earned that opportunity from them. You earned the opportunity to have a chance, and you. So how did you go about earning that? Where did you come from, and how did you come up with your work ethic and decide you weren't going to be a victim?
You know, it's funny. Back to my story, one of the challenges I've always had is my weight. You know, I've gained and lost 1,000 pounds probably in my life. And I remember as I thought myself as a pretty good athlete. I mean, I played in high school with guys that went to the NBA or went to Major League Baseball or went to, you know, Division I football scholarships. And I played with and against some pretty high athletes. I was a good athlete, not that level of athlete, but a good high school athlete. And I remember as a freshman year, I thought I was a pretty good basketball player, but I was very overweight. And I got cut from the freshman basketball team. I think I was 5'4" and about 230 pounds. And my sophomore year, I grew to 5'9", but I started running and I started training and working out and eating right. I was 5'9", maybe 165. And I worked incredibly hard. And I made the basketball team, the JV team, as like the 15th guy on a 15-man team or – you know, the 16th man on a 15-man team, you know, I'd get my 40 seconds in, you know, when the score was, you know, well in doubt. I don't think I played a minute that wasn't garbage time. And I just kept working. I remember, I don't know what they did back then and at that time, but late 70s or 79 to 80, they'd make you run a mile before practice. So before the first practice, I remember that senior year, I ran a mile in, 4 minutes and 58 seconds. You know, which wasn't like a track star, but it showed how I was in such good physical shape. And so I was probably the sixth or seventh man my junior year, and I never started a game until I was a senior. And I just worked harder than everybody. And I made up for the fact that I couldn't jump out of the gym by just playing angles and trying to find out where people, the other team, the best scorers on the other team, where they like to get their points from, and try to not make sure they got to that spot, you know, on the floor, you know, where they would want to score from and make them uncomfortable and do whatever I needed to do. And so I thought I got the most out of my high school basketball career based on my athletic ability. And I took that lesson in place that I could have just, you know, gotten another gallon of Haagen-Dazs and gotten under the blanket and said, the world's not fair, and crawled under the blanket. And I said, that's not going to work. And I'm going to not get outworked. And if it doesn't happen, it's not because I didn't do everything in my will to make that happen. And when I learned that, I realized that was a transferable skill that could go to any place in my life. And so do I think of myself as reasonably intelligent? I do. Have I tried to be much more strategic as I've gotten older and wiser and have more experience? Of course I have. But I always go back to, you're not going to outwork me, and you're never going to beat me. If you knock me down, Pete, I'm going to get up again, and you can knock me down, and I will get up again, and you can knock me down. I will get up one more time than you can knock me down. And I think that at the end of the day, that ultimately grittiness is the difference between the men and the boys and the girls and the women. That's where it's at for me. So it's always those lessons in your life of how it gave me a skill set. The other thing that I also think was a great lesson in high school that I learned is I thought I had a teacher that thought I had more ability than I was putting in the effort. You know, I was getting good grades, but I wasn't working to my potential. And I thought he was tougher on me. In fact, I wrote about it in the book. And I thought it was kind of unfair that I got judged by a different standard with him. And something a year or so later, as I was getting out of high school, clicked in for me, which has been one of the most valuable lessons I've learned in my entire life, is I also realized at that point that I was not competing against other people. I was competing against my own ability. And what was great with that is that what the great part about that is I would do my best to be the very best version of myself. But the best part of that was, if I'm going to be the best I can be, I then can be the biggest cheerleader for everybody else, because I'm not competing against you or against Justin. I'm competing against me. So if I'm the best version of me, if something good happens to me, I hope something great happens to you. If I have a dollar, I hope you guys have 100. You know, I want, and so the idea is it freed me to be the kind of person that I want to be.
Yes.
I'm pumped up. I mean,
that's deep where it comes from, baby.
That's amazing. That reminds me of. Right there, you said, you know, you're always going to get up. You're always, you know, never going to. When you fall, you're going to get up. You know, my buddy Brian, you know, we're big Batman fans. And I think he said it in the Batman Begins series, you know, he asked Batman, why do we fall? It's to pick ourselves up. We fall to get up.
You got no other option.
Don't stay down. Get up.
People are counting on you.
The only good thing about getting knocked down is the comeback, right?
Exactly. The comeback is always better than the setback.
Yes, sir. Love it. Mark B. Murphy. Well, thank you very much, sir. Hey, any final thoughts, Mark? We're up over a half hour. I know you're a very busy man. We appreciate your time. Final thoughts.
I appreciate you guys. I think you guys are wonderful at what you guys do. You guys, it's clear to me you guys are very, very good at what you do, and I just appreciate you having me on your call. And I would, love to continue to have this be one of several conversations where, not necessarily on the podcast, but we continue to build our relationships, offline. You know, and let me know what I can do to support you, because I think the mitzvah is always in the giving; it's not in the receiving.
Absolutely, thank you, Mark. Much appreciated. Hey, real quick, where can folks follow you or contact you?
They can reach me. It's Mark with a K, Mark_Murphy@northeastprivate.com, or they can reach me at Northeast Private Client Group, and Sequoia Private Client Group is our website. And as I said, I'm always happy to, you know, help people create multi-generational wealth. Or I think we're sort of known as the guys that help people create multi-generational wealth. But I think more importantly is you want people to live a life by design and have the kind of life that they want to have, not the life that you want them to have or I want them to have, but the kind of life that they want. And I think to empower people to be able to do that and have it all, a lot of people say you can't have it all. I say you can. And that's why I appreciate being with you guys, because we're like-minded on that.
Yeah, man. It's an abundance mindset. You can have it all, says Mark B. Murphy. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Justin Bigelow. Thank you for watching and listening to the Dream Huge podcast. Please remember to like, subscribe, and share. And as always, remember the rules. Work hard, never give up, and dream huge. Let's see the guns, Mark. Put them up there. Love it, baby. Woo. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Justin. Have a great day, y'all.
Thank you for listening to the Dream Huge podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. For more inspiring content, follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Dream Huge Realty and on TikTok at Dream Huge Inc. Until next time.